SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
On the radio.
30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys are live.
What's up, friendos? Welcome in. It's hour two of In This League right here on Sports Grid and all the places, all the things. We're in lots of places on podcasts, Mightier 1090, ESPN Radio, on the Sports Grid. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. It's Bogman of the Welsh on Twitter at Bogman Sports, at Is It the Welsh, and of course at InThisLeague.com, where you can sign up for a Patreon, get access to all the stuff, which we would like for you to do. We are going to jump right into things because in the last hour, we did the Saturday games. We are going through our picks. We are now jumping into our Sunday games, and we've got a fun interview jumping over to a baseball side coming up here in the next segment with our friend Ryan Bloomfield, so we want to get to it. Bogman, Sunday's action, big old games. The Rams travel to the Bucks. The Bucks, it's obligatory. The Bucks are the obligatory 3-point home favorite. The line is set at 48.5, and let's look at what our little fun factoids we've got here. Almost 50 points scored, by the way, on this stadium for the year. Odell Beckham has recorded 60-plus receiving yards in each of the last 10 appearances against NFC South opponents for your prop bets. The Rams have won each of their last 5 games as underdogs against the Bucs. That's a wild number. And Leonard Fournette has scored at least one touchdown in each of his last 6 postseason appearances if he plays. The Rams, 9-9 against the spread, 9-8-1 on over-unders. The Bucs, 10-8 against the spread, and 9-9 on over-unders. So, 3 points to Tampa Bay, Bogman. 48.5 is the line. What say you?
This is a game I don't want to bet right now. And even if we do get word that Ryan Jensen and Tristan Wirfs are back for the Bucks, I still don't know that they're going to be 100%, and I still don't know if I want to bet it. We saw, you know, kind of a different team when those guys went out. What we saw from the Rams against the Cardinals, though, was a team that won absolutely dominated on defense. Kyler Murray didn't have anything. And Matt Stafford had been making mistakes for about a month straight going into that game and had not looked good. I just don't trust him, and I don't think you're going to be able to beat the Bucs without him passing the ball 35 times. And he's been making major mistakes. So for me, I'm going to take Tampa Bay in this game. I'm also going to take the under, even though the betting majority is 98% cash on the over.
Wow, is
so
it really?
I'm going to take the under because, look, the Rams played good defense last week. That's how they won that game, right? And the Bucs on offense, you might be missing 2 starting offensive linemen. That is a huge loss for them. Leonard Fournette's still up in the air, and they're still dealing with the losses of Godwin and AB. So I think this is definitely my favorite bet in this game is the under. And I'm going to be taking Tampa Bay because there's just no way I'm betting against Brady in the playoffs. I can't do it. So
yeah,
give me the under.
I agree. My favorite bet of this is taking Tampa Bay, and obviously the Rams were kind of on a roll there. They've got a great wide receiver core, but I think the Bucs are monsters. You get Tom Brady in the playoffs, you know what happens. We might get Lenny back. You might get a Ronald Jones back. I mean, they did what they did against Philadelphia with Keyshawn Vaughn, and then if you get your pieces back, it's hard to bet against Tampa Bay, and it's hard to bet against them at home. So I love Tampa Bay -3, even though that's a close number. I'm going to go with the squares. I'm going to go with the over. I know you really love the under. I don't feel fantastic about it, but that's the side I'm going to go on. Let's see where the coin is, and we also want to get our card here in just a minute. Heads for Tampa, tails for the Rams, and it is going, Rams. And then heads for over, tails for under, it is going over. So it's going to go with the over. So the final game up, we have got the Buffalo Bills traveling to Kansas City. Kansas City is a 1.5-point favorite, and here's your biggest line of the week, 53.5. Some little factoids for you. There's only been an average of just under 46 points scored in Kansas City on the year. The Chiefs have been the first to 10 points in each of their last 8 home games. The Chiefs have won each of their last 7 home games. And then there's another prop for you on Dawson Knox. The spread, 10-6-2. Buffalo is against the spread this year, 9-9 on over-unders. Kansas City, 9-9 against the spread, and 11-7 on over-unders. So what do you think, Boggs?
I mean, did you see, you know, I know you watched the Steelers game for a little bit, and then it just got away in the second quarter, really. And, you know, you probably just turned that off. The Buffalo game, also another lopsided game. But did you see that Buffalo was perfect? They were perfect. Scored a touchdown on every single drive. I understand.
I saw them. I saw that game.
How do you not take the over? Both these offenses are peaking right now. They're clicking. They're playing great. I'm taking Patrick Mahomes at home. He has the magic. Whatever the magic is, he has it right
now.
He's
got the magic.
He does, dude. Josh Allen has the magic right now, too. But I'm going to take the home team here. It's a point and a half. I don't know why Kansas City is only getting a point and a half at home against Buffalo. I love both sides. I'm going to put them both on my card. Ooh. Kansas City and the over. Hammer it.
I think Buffalo is hot right now. I think the defense is solid. I think their offense, I think Josh Allen's a better quarterback right now. I think that line is also suspect to exactly your point. They should be getting at least 3. There's a lot of juice on Buffalo right now. I think as I've been doing so much betting, the one thing you start learning about is that betting the lines and not necessarily the teams. And there's a susness to this. It is a Kansas City, which I think is a tough place, but Buffalo, they're just gamers and they're rockers. I'm going to take Buffalo. I'm going to take them +1.5. I'm also going to go with the over. Let's see what the coin says. And then we are going to give our quick card here. The coin on the flip is going to go with the Chiefs and the under. So the card, though, we have about 30 seconds. I'm going to take 2 games on my card. I'm going to put the San Francisco Green Bay over at 47. I really like that one. They hit it during the season. And I'm going to take Tampa -3. Those are my favorite cards that I'm going to play, my 2 plays. What about you?
Kansas City -1.5. Steelers woke up Patrick Mahomes and gave me the over in that game because both these offenses can't be stopped.
Ooh, maybe a little parlay. You could parlay both those games together. Kansas City -1.5 and 53.5 over. That is our card. You guys want to hear our best bets of the week? Log into the In This League Fantasy Football podcast. Subscribe to it for Bet This League. When we come back, Ryan Bloomfield from Baseball HQ. We're talking baseball. We're talking player debates to get you set for your fantasy baseball season. 3 segments of that, and then we'll be back on the end. Don't go anywhere, friends, in this league. Coming up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to
In This League.
I love you.
Ready to party!
Oh, you know it's about to happen, Ryan. You know exactly what we're going to do. All right. My man. Look at this shirt. Look at that shirt.
Oh, you even brought this shirt. Oh, no.
He brought the shirt. That is Ryan Bloomfield from Baseball HQ. You can find him on Twitter at RyanBHQ. He's got the Bloom boards. I love the Bloom boards. I'm telling you, if you guys aren't checking those out, I think I mentioned this to a few people. Something I'm starting to do, I did this year, is anything fun I find from the smart people that I trust, I'm actually saving the tweets and I'm putting them in the comment section of my ranks as a sightful thing to go back. Just all the different stuff. It doesn't matter who it is. And I'm citing the tweet. Obviously, I'm literally taking the tweet. I would say right now, currently, the most saved stuff I have is Ryan Bloomfield's because there are great, great tweets out there. He's a great baseball mind. Been doing it for a long time. And, you know, you have always been down with us as you even took part in the old player debate books and you've always been available for us. Ryan Bloomfield, what is up, my friend?
Oh, not too much, guys. I forgot about those player debates. Like,
yeah.
It was all boxing themed. Right?
Yeah, like, that's exactly what it was. Like, especially the first one. Actually, both of them were. It got dolled up a little bit better in the second one, but it was literally supposed to be player versus player.
Only boxing themed baseball, fantasy baseball, product ever, right, Welsh? I mean,
probably ever. Here, hold on. I think I've got one.
Oh, you got the cover?
Fun. I remember. Yeah, there were like 3 of us on 3 guests or whatever debating 2 players, and like it was either a knockout or like depending on who we all picked.
Just unplug my headphones.
Yeah, Welsh is frazzled over here.
No, I just unplugged my headphones. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I forgot. Yeah. So here it was. This is the second book. This is the good book, where our boy Jesse helped put together like the cover.
Yeah.
But if people don't remember, so if people watching live can see it, you know, we would have the score and we would literally take the rating system that people would do and we would give it one. So like, let's see, I wonder if I could find, let's see, there's Clay.
It's funny to go back and look at the name. Like, I think that one name was like Gossman versus Kyle Freeland. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Years later, looking back at it.
We had some great names in these too. James Anderson, Paul Spohr, Nick Pollock, Alex Chamberlain. No, here's a Ryan Bloomfield one. I was looking for a Bloomfield one. So check this out. This was round 35 we had. The judges were Tim Heaney, Ryan Bloomfield, and Chris Blessing. It was Marcelo Zuna versus Justin Upton. Mm. And Blessing gave Ozuna a 10-8 win. Heaney gave Ozuna a 10-9 win. And you had a draw. But the overall winner, Marcel Ozuna, won with a 10-9. We were actually pretty creative now that I look back on this. Boxing had literally nothing to do with baseball, but somehow we turned it into it.
Yeah, but they were debates, player debates, one-on-one, ding, ding, let's go. You know,
yeah, that's how we were doing it.
So. And I picked a draw. That's good of me. Maybe that's
I'm trying to find
that. Maybe that's why it didn't take off the following year.
Yeah, I remember we were definitely, here's one. Here's another one. Check this one out. This was, look at this heavy hitter. Paul Spohr, Derek Van Riper, and Ryan Bloomfield for Paul Goldschmidt versus Giancarlo Stanton. Ooh. And I did the write-up for Goldie. Bogman did the write-up for Giancarlo Stanton.
Of course.
And Paul and Bloomfield both gave the score to Goldie. DVR gave it to Stanton, but Goldschmidt won 10-8. This was the 10th round one here for the player debate. So it's a relic copy here. I think I've got like one or two of those left. We should autograph them and then we should sell them for $12,000 to make up for all the time that we missed and all the money that we left on the table.
Exactly.
That's how much that's going to be. Ryan Bloomfield, it is so good to see you and hear you and talk to you. We've got a live studio audience from Patreon as we're going to do some player debates. What is going down with you in Baseball HQ right now? I mean, obviously, people should be checking out the Bloom boards, but what should people be on the lookout for if they want a little bit more Bloomer in their life for their baseball prep?
More Bloomer in their life.
That's right.
If you want that, debatable. You can check me out on Baseball HQ. I've been there. This is my 10th year, so I've hit the decade mark with HQ. So I'm starting to get up there. I write a weekly speculator column that looks at 20% outcomes of players. Right now, especially this time of season, everyone looks at projections and that sort of thing. And you think, you know, Paul Goldschmidt's going to hit 30 home runs. Well, you know, that's a range of outcomes. He might hit 45 if everything goes right. He might hit 15 if things don't. So I take that kind of 20% hedge and look at different things that could happen every week. So you can find my work there at Baseball HQ. And then, on the free side, we are a pay site. So there is a subscription there. Some of our work gets put out for free every now and then. So you can check that out. But then, yeah, Bloom boards are out there for everybody. It's kind of my own little pet research project that just like throwing out there and having people react to it and engage.
I love those Bloom boards. As a
matter
of fact,
what's your favorite one that you've done?
Yes. Well, I've got a surprise for everybody. That's a great question. Rock that one, Bloomer, and then we've got a surprise for everybody. But that's a fantastic question by Bogman because you put some good ones out there.
Yeah. Favorite one so far, I'm going to say the first one I did, which is about playing time. So I look, you know, a lot of times I look at skills and different filters and we'll get into it later, I guess. But one of the things I looked at was playing time, and there's guys who, you know, last year had over 675 plate appearances, and we almost just kind of assume that's going to happen again, even the most durable guys like a Marcus Semien, Whit Merrifield, those types of guys. The chances of them actually doing that again are very little. Not only if they do it twice in a row. So I put this out there. There were 212 players with 675 plate appearances in the 2010s, in that whole decade. The following year, only a third of them had over 675 plate appearances again.
Man.
So, and then the board itself was just the guys in 2021 who had that many plate appearances. And it's not to kind of crap on any of these guys in particular. It's just to say, like, don't expect that to happen again. Even if they've shown that skill multiple times, odds are an injury is going to happen to one of them, or there are just things will happen and they won't get back.
You put those guys all in a room and say, look to your left, look to your right. Two of you will not make it out.
Will not be here.
Yeah, exactly.
Only a third doing it. So, yeah.
It'd be like Squid Game. It's just like beep, beep, boop, beep. We'll just eliminate some of that. And there's some big names on here. Marcus Semien, Merrifield were the only two to get over the 700 plate appearance mark. You've got Vladdy, you've got Freeman, Haniger, Edmund, Bichette. I mean, there's obviously some names where the regression isn't going to necessarily matter, but I mean, what you're saying is a pretty big thing. I mean, you're saying pretty big thing that to have that many plate appearances cross over is not of the norm. So that's a really great question.
And now, the other cool thing too with it too is like even guys who did it 2 years in a row, the odds for the third year really wasn't any better. So
yeah.
you might think a semi and racks up plate appearances like that every single year. He in particular might, but on average, I'm going to say he's not next year.
Yeah, he's an interesting one too. I feel like he's one of those guys right now that is starting to stack up a little bit of dislike. I've seen a couple, I saw Matt Williams from Roto World kind of being like, I'm out on him. And I've seen a couple other people. And it feels like it is distinctly about Texas. That is distinctly about the park. Is it, I mean, not even trying to like sidetrack here, but when you look at Marcus Semien, because I think he's a little divisive because, you know, solid Oakland, and you go to Toronto and he becomes an absolute fantasy superstar. Who gets a second? I mean, I remember us talking about him as the sneaky play coming into last year because it's like, hey, by the way, value him over a lot of these other shortstops because he's going to get that second base eligibility. I remember on this podcast having that conversation, Boggs, where I had him above, I think it was Carlos Correa, and that wasn't normal to the ADP.
And were we even sure we knew where they were going to be playing big part of the offseason?
We didn't know. That was the big thing.
Buffalo was a great hitter's park, and then they ended up in Tampa Bay for a little bit or whatever.
But we knew. We were like, we can sneak him in at second base when he's not quite there. But the reason he's so divisive is like now he costs you an arm and a leg. So, I mean, do you think with Semien, like park factors should come so heavily into play into his current cost?
I think park factors and lineup. I think those are the two big things. Like that combination of the
quite
two
a different lineup.
Is kind of a killer. Like even though Texas did sign Semien and they signed Seager, it's still a really bad lineup. And then part of the reason why Semien was able to accrue so many plate appearances last year is Toronto was just mashing and he would get five plate appearances every game, no matter
that
what.
Lineup
and
over.
That adds up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
Buckle up, buckaroo. All night.
So here's something cool that we collabed with. Mr. Ryan Bloomfield is going to debut a Bloom board on this podcast.
Oh,
everybody listening. So we're going to make him hold it back, you know, even a little bit after the episode drops, not just the live people, you know, because we're special like that. Bloomfield is going to debut a Bloom board right here on the podcast. So, Ryan, that's all you, brother. What do you got?
All right. So how do I throw it up here?
Let's see.
The share button.
Do you see it?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, hit that share button.
Like and share. Hit the subscribe button.
Like and share
down there.
Yep. Hit the ding. You see that ding notification? You lock into it. Okay, I'm excited to see this. I'm excited to hear about it. New debuted Bloom board right here. What do we got?
There we go. How are we looking?
Oh, we got perfect. It.
There we go.
All right, cool.
Tell us about it.
So what this is a first half versus second half fade list and strikeout minus walk rate. So a couple things here that I want to talk about why I think this is important. I don't just throw these boards out there for no reason. These are, you know, things that I think are actionable that, you know, projection systems may not catch. And so with pitchers, like if I had to pick one metric out there that I think is by far the most important, it is that strikeout minus walk rate. And that's available on FanGraphs, that's available on Baseball HQ, that's available almost anywhere. So the other thing that I've really found the last few years is, unlike hitters, when I'm doing, you know, kind of my player evaluations, I feel like pitchers can really reinvent themselves very quickly through, you know, changes in velocity, changes in pitch mix, throwing you know, a new pitch more, one of their better pitches more, fading a bad pitch, those types
some
of
examples
things.
We're going to have, by the way, in maybe some of the player debates for that exact thing.
Yep, exactly. And so, like, what I want to do with this board is throw out a list of guys who were demonstratively worse in the second half. And then what I really intend these to be is a deeper dive into why that happened. And then you can kind of, you know, make your evaluation based off of that. I'm not saying to, you know, fade all of these guys. You know, there is such a thing as just variance or a bad half or whatever. But if you take this list and then you look at guys who either dropped in velocity, were hurt in the second half, or those sorts of things, I think once you kind of go that one level deeper, you really get to the, you know, kind of the point of what I'm trying to get at with all these players.
There's some killer names on this.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to say is there's a big list that everybody can check out, but there's four guys that are inside the top 150 on here that might be important. There's two that are inside the top 100. I'm going to list them off and you tell me if there's any, you know, is there a true fade to these guys? I'm going to list them all off and then we'll get your take on them. Joe Musgrove, I hate to see that because I love Joe Musgrove. First half, K-minus walk percentage, 23.8, dropped down to 16.5 in the second half. That's a pretty big decrease. The biggest name on this list is a little bit further down because the decrease I don't think was quite as aggressive, but still aggressive. Zach Wheeler, 25.7, dropped down to 21.5. Again, this is K-minus walk percentage. The other two, you've got Yu Darvish, 24.6 in the first half, down to 20.1. And then, very popular name, Tyler Molly, who had a 21.7 drop down to a 16.9 K-minus walk percentage. Those are four guys inside the top 150. And I would say, you know, I don't know how much Darvish is targeted at this point, but three of those names are hot names. I mean, Wheeler is being drafted as an absolute ace. I would say just Joe Musgrove is probably a safety net pitcher for all of us. You know, he's in that Luis Castillo range, maybe even kind of like near the Freddy Peraltas and stuff like that. And Joe Musgrove has a lot of safety to it. And Tyler Molly is just everybody loves, and he's not really coming at the cost of like a super cheap pitcher anymore, but still, you know, post 100, that's still nice. Musgrove has the most aggressive. So in an actual fade standpoint, what do you think about these? Who are you really, really fading when you take a look at this list? Maybe all of them.
Yeah, I would say most of them would be probably Darvish out of all of them. I just look at the age, the health history, and then with Darvish specifically, like there was a full mile an hour drop in velocity in the second half. You know, is he going to recapture that? So yeah, his swinging strike rate in the first half went from 13 down to 11.5%. Then he lost, 94.9 miles an hour to 94.1 in the second half. So like you look at, you know, that overall strikeout minus walk, but then you add those context layers, the velocity, the lack of whiffs, the age and the health for Darvish. Those are all red flags.
He's just been a roller coaster like the last 3 years anyway, too. He's been up and down and up and down. It's, you know, you almost, you got to take, you know, what's the nausea medication? You got to take some of Dramamine. You got to take some of that. Take Darvish. So
I take that whenever I go on boats, by the way.
Little
known fact. Cannot do it.
By the way, there was another 150 guy. Also, Framber Valdez, I forgot to mention. I didn't even see him. My camera's actually in the way. 14.8, which is probably one of the lowest first half, even K to walk minus percentage, down to a 10.3. So are there any of these guys that this means nothing to you? You're not going to change your statement. And that probably is pushing to the main three that I was talking about. Maybe specific. I feel like you're going to say Wheeler, but, you know, does the Wheeler, Molly, Musgrove, when you see this, you go, okay, duly noted, but you're not going to let this actually turn into a fade, even though this is kind of a fade list.
Yeah, so, yeah, Wheeler's one of them. I think just because you're comparing first to second half, like his first half was just so crazy that, you know, anybody's gonna fall from that. You know, most humans are gonna fall from that. So, you know, Wheeler going from 26 down to 21.5 strikeout minus walk rate, like that's fine. Yes, it's a decrease, but his velocity was fine. You know, things look things look really good. He just, it was just one of those things where
his second half would still be sixth highest on this list. So,
yep. I mean, and yeah, he was fine. So another one who I'm not terribly worried about is actually John Means. He was out for quite a bit in the middle of the season and just kind of tried to ramp up after that. And the results weren't there. So again, kind of looking at that, you know, additional layer of context with Means, I think he'll be fine, especially with the changes at Camden Yard. So those, you know, are two guys who are on there that I'm not as concerned about.
I think that's actually something important to talk about. We had one of our guys, Mummer, drop a question. I don't think he was going to be able to make the live thing, but his literal question when we were saying that you were going to be on with us was, how does a realignment of left field in Camden Yards affect the values? He's actually talking about hitters of Mountcastle and Mancini, but maybe it's an overall thing real quick. You know, while we're sitting here and chatting, but right before we get to these player debates is, you know, what's your take on that? Because I'm a little bit torn. I mean, it's a little dramatic, especially when you look at some of the overlay stuff. It's a little bit dramatic. You definitely can see a positive for a guy like John Means. Maybe even any of the, like if a Grayson Rodriguez were to come up from a rookie perspective, that's kind of nice, especially when rookies get a little home run heavy. And then from a hitter perspective, you want to pick on, you know, the Mancinis and the Mountcastles. But I got to tell you, Ryan, I don't know if I looked at any of this to be super actionable that I can go, because I felt like we played this game of like what ifs during the COVID season so much. And everyone was like, hey, listen, we just got to get them out there. I don't know if we can really, truly go and do this. I don't know if I can go in and be like, well, this is totally going to change the entire ballgame. I think some people have already run some of those numbers, and there wasn't I mean, I could be wrong on some of the overlays, but I don't even think Mountcastle specifically lost a whole bunch of homers when they did that. So what's your take on the realignment, and does it actually affect anybody?
Yeah, Mountcastle, actually, he lost like four homers, I think, over the last two seasons combined, four or five homers.
Two seasons combined is important for you to say.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, so, is that a season and a half, though? You know, I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, still, it's.
Yeah. Sure, I know. I'm just making the point.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, so, I say Mountcastle has lost four home runs. It's kind of funny, like, and I don't know. I talk about projections a lot, but like, if we think we can project a lot of these guys within four home runs at the end of the season, like, we're kidding ourselves. We're not that good at this. So changes where it is something like that, I'm like, that's within the kind of, you know, standard error anyway. Right. I think it's a bigger deal for the pitchers. A John Means is a really heavy fly ball pitcher. Like, I think that's really going to help him a lot. But in general, I feel like we are overreacting to the news just because it is some type of news right now in the lockouts. It's like the one thing to kind of cling on to analyze the hell out of.
Is it enough for you to move John Means up? Is it enough for you to be like, wow, you know, all right, I don't know where you have him, but, you know, now he's got to go up five pitcher spots or he's got to change a tier. Like, I could make an argument. I'm not aggressively excited about him. I've got him relatively low, but I feel like it's probably in the same general area. But, you know, if you have him in the areas of, you know, John Ryan or Jordan Montgomery or Germán Márquez or Oscar Hinoa, like, did that move make him unanimously above all those players at this point?
Not really. I think it helps, but it's not, you know, huge. The other big thing too, that a lot of, you know, Todd Zola has brought this up, but like, you look at like a Coors Field, by moving the walls back, yeah, home runs are affected, but like batting average and extra base hits, that's a lot more ground to cover in the outfield. And I don't think we're talking about that enough. Like, I actually think it's going to help batting average for a lot of the Baltimore hitters, because there's going to be so much more ground to cover in left field. So it's not just home runs that that are affected. It is, you know, if it goes off the wall, it's still a double. And, you know, maybe because left field is so much further back, left fielders playing deeper and three or four bloops fall in throughout the course of the season, and that moves your batting average up like 10 points. Right. You know, so it's just so hard to tell, but it's important to kind of look at the park factors in all those ways, not just homers, but also the added space with batting average and BABIP and that sort of thing.
A couple more doubles for Cedric Mullins is what we're looking at.
Thank you.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Let me tell you something about
In This League.
Let's get into this bad boy. Very good stuff. Bloomfield, thank you so much for debuting that Bloom board. That'll be available for everybody to see. We got to talk about it a little bit here. I love the regression idea candidates. I will tell you, I kind of hated seeing Joe Musgrove being that aggressive, by the way, because I feel like he's just such a great, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to call him
he
like
is the draft pigeon darling every year. By the way,
yeah,
just,
but
every year everyone is Musgrove's my guy. Now it's not Musgrove.
But now it's not built around like, oh, you know, like, man, if this could just work out, things are working out. He's in San Diego, you know, he's in a great spot. He's got a great offense. He put up a really solid year. I mean, he feels like a backbone rotational pitcher, which I really want to invest in because I think from a cost perspective, he's, you know, if you're lucky, he's SP3. Probably more of like an SP2 in most, and I'm here for that. I'm just a little bit worried when you see some of those we can't afford to have those strikeouts go down too far.
Interesting thing with Musgrove too, just real quick, is you know, because that board just breaks up first, second half. A lot of what Musgrove, you know, a lot of that second half fade, so to speak, was all in September. Like, I wonder if he just kind of wore out at the end of the year, just had something going on. Like, it was all like in his last four or five starts. The velocity was fine. So, like, I'm not as worried, even though it's, you know, it's a pretty sizable drop. I'm not as worried when you kind of dig a little deeper and see when it happened and you look at the velo.
Yeah. We got a bunch of our good audience in here, a bunch of shout outs. I like our boy, my boy Ryan said, drink some Rock Hill Farms bourbon. Ryan famously sent me some Rock Hill Farms, which I appreciate. Could probably use right now to clear up the old cough there a little bit. We've got some really good debates people have already dropped in. Barrow wanted to ask me why I hate Bruhan. I thought it was to you. I don't want to talk about that. Bruhan, we don't need that. Here's a great question we could start right before we do the debates. Britton said, hey, Bloomfield, can you rank these bands? Pixies, Mudhoney, or Smashing Pumpkins?
It's so I'm going default, like the one I know the most, and that's Billy Corgan and the Boys, Smashing Pumpkins. I, you know, I love those guys growing up. So, Smashing Pumpkins.
Ironically, maybe people might know this. I'm gonna go Pixies. I'm gonna go the Pixies. Then I'll go Smash. I was never a big Smashing Pumpkins guy. I don't even know who Mudhoney is. Bogman?
I've never heard of Mudhoney.
Don't know who Mudhoney is.
Okay.
But I mean, I barely know who the Smashing Pumpkins are. So, you know, I'm not a music guy. Everybody knows that. So.
Yeah, I could burn the whole thing down and we could just, you know, put in some copyright violations and start putting some Mudhoney in here. So anybody that is hanging out with us live, people have already started dropping them. You can drop a debate if you see something really awesome or, you know, you come across something you really want to see. We have got some debates that I have preset, and it's ironic. I've seen a couple of the names of guys that are involved in a few of these. And the first one, because we're going to do at least two, and then we'll take a couple listener ones, and we'll kind of go back and forth as we can. The first one up here, I think, is a very fun one. It is Tyler O'Neill versus Wander Franco. Or as I put in the tweet, Wander Fran, because I'm a big, stupid idiot.
And he's apparently so good, he has a nickname already.
He doesn't even need the rest of it. I specifically on this one also put that don't focus on position because, God, you put this stuff out on Twitter and people are immediately like, well, you know, one's a shortstop, one's an outfield. Like, oh, really? Like, no, don't think about that. Because when you're at this point in a draft, too, you just don't really care about that.
Right.
You're not really looking at that. Your focus is going to be on the best. I mean, there's an argument you could say, hey, and we'll probably all kind of have it. Hey, shortstop is deep. Outfield, you got to fill more. I guess you could have that. But still, you're not hyper-focused on that at that point. You're just hyper-focused on the stats. And the projections are very favorable to Tyler O'Neill. They're fine with Wander Franco. They don't go overboard, though he's definitely got one of the higher batting averages across the board. We've had, you know, we put this out like an hour before the podcast or two. And it was about an hour, and we got like 250 votes on it where that's at. But Bloomfield, let's start with you. Big debate of essential top 50 guys, Tyler O'Neill versus Wander Franco. What say you?
The other kind of on Twitter, well, you know, in Dynasty, I would take, like, yeah.
Honestly, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wander Franco is the man. I'm going Tyler O'Neill. I just think, you know, what, you know, Wander Franco gets tons of hype, deservedly so, for the hit tool and kind of the real baseball skills. He had 7 homers and 2 steals and 281 at-bats last season. Like, the actual fantasy category production with Franco, yes, the batting average, he's going to blow O'Neill out of the water with that. But the actual, like, counting stats, I don't see as sexy with Franco yet. And I know with this approach, like, this is why I missed out on Vlad Jr. last year. I do want to kind of see them do it before, especially when you're taking these guys with, like, top 50 picks. And I just don't think Franco's going to have the home run and stolen base production to beat out O'Neill. So, like, O'Neill, I mean, his Tyler O'Neill hit what he hit last year. His batting average is going to pretty much crash. I think he was around 280 last year.
Yeah, I think it was, because he hit, like, I got some stats I'm going to give out to everybody, but he hit, like, 280, I think, across, or it was 279 to 280 on both sides of versus lefties and righties, too, which was, like, kind of incredible. But, you know, to your crashing point is about the K rate, so.
Yep, exactly. And I had O'Neill in the baseball forecaster, and I kind of concluded it that he's as good a bet as anybody to go 30-15 again. 30 homers, 15 steals. You know, it will be with a lower batting average, but I think 30-15 out of O'Neill. He's done it before in the majors. Like, I'll take that over Franco, who is probably going to do something like that someday. And Welsh, like, you obviously on the prospect side, you know a heck of a lot more than I do on that end. But I need to see something in the majors, homer and stolen base production wise, out of Franco before I consider him this early. So he's actually a pretty big fade for me early in drafts. I'd probably pull a Bogman no shares at this point.
Zero shares. All right. So that's one for Tyler O'Neill. Bogman?
Also Tyler O'Neill for me. And like Bloomfield said, for me, this is about your power speed combo versus average here. And it's just too much for Tyler O'Neill. This upside is too big for him. Franco is going to be great, and I have no doubt about that. But he's super young, and he hasn't done it yet. And O'Neill has. And that's kind of what it comes down to when you're taking a player this high. I think Franco's going to have an outstanding season, but we know power's typically the last tool to develop. And for him, I don't know if it's going to develop this year. It could be another couple of years before he starts absolutely mashing bombs. Maybe it's this year, but I know Tyler O'Neill's going to do it. So I'm going to be taking the Tyler O'Neill side.
Yeah. I got some interesting fun facts that I was just like running around with these guys, and I'll throw out to you. So here's a couple things. I thought this was wild. Franco did not have a K percentage over 20% on any single type of pitch thrown to him in 2021. So sliders, breaking ball, all the pitches, none of them were over a 20 K percentage, which is wild. So check this out. Tyler O'Neill only had one type of pitch that was under 20% that he struck out. That was a sinker. Every other pitch thrown to him, he had a K percentage of 29.8 or higher. All the others were over 30. I think there was one that was in 40s. The only pitch that he did not strike out at that type of a rate was a sinker. I thought those were two wild type of things. You want to talk about like the type of hitter that Wander Franco is. There's not a pitch you get to throw to him that's going to fool him. He does not strike at that rate. I think he's projected at like a, you know, whatever it is, like a 12% rate this year. But here's some other crazy stuff. Tyler O'Neill had an absurd, when I was looking at the pitch stuff, I think this is crazy. I didn't go and look if this is the number one. He had a crazy 63% hard hit percentage against four-seam fastballs. 63 hard hit on fastballs. O'Neill is projected on the projections. 251 batting average this year, 36 homers, 13 stolen bases on steamer, 85-85 around there. Wander is sitting at that 19-10 with a 288. Here's my big worry. I'm very worried about the K rate from Tyler O'Neill. I'm very worried about that, but he didn't show massive signs of struggling, like versus righties or lefties. I told you, I went to look at that. Nothing. Second half splits, that didn't hurt him either. He hits the ball crazy hard. So I think in this like era of baseball that we're dealing with right now, he is a safe 30 for 15 guy. And with the counting stats, it's just better than what you can count on for Wander right now. I think the power projections on Wander Franco are low. Maybe on an overall perspective. I really think he could get into the 25 marker this year. I think that's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I also don't like to make some of those major bets on some of those young guys at a high cost. Tyler O'Neill's floor outside of the K's, he checks all those stupid boxes. I hate to admit it. Hard hit across the board. He smashes the ball. 250 batting average. He can walk into 30-15. It's hard not to bet against that. And then like the boring answer to throw out as well is like shortstop is deep, you know, outfield is not necessarily. I don't think the Wander stolen bases are an elite thing. I never really have thought that. And I think that's something, you know, like you said, Ryan, I just don't think it's something that we're going to be dealing with long term. And I think O'Neill, even if the power comes down, he's going to keep running. So I'm going to go with Tyler O'Neill. I'm going to sweep this bad boy. And I think that might be surprising to some people. On the voting poll, what do you guys think? Have you looked at the poll?
I haven't in a while, but I think it's like 2/3 Tyler O'Neill.
What do you think, Ryan?
That would be my guess. I just think the stolen base is the differentiator.
You guys are right. It is 2/3, but in favor of Wander Franco. Wow. On the votes. 68.7%. 68.7%. Say Wander Franco over Tyler O'Neill.
Damn.
That's
bonkers. The big thing for me, and it was interesting, Welsh, to hear you kind of comment on the power. But for me, it's three. The number is three. That is the number of stolen base attempts that Franco had last year. Like, I just don't think he's going to run that much. And that
no.
crushes
I think if O'Neill had just the power and not the speed, I would probably go towards Franco in this, but it's the combo of them both. I mean, you know, he's gonna outpower and outsteal him. So how much are you getting in runs and average? You have to get a lot. And you probably will in average. Are you in runs? Maybe. I don't know. So I think that's what kind of, it's just that power speed combo. You can't ignore it.
Yeah, I almost kind of think Tyler O'Neill can be like broke ass Bryce Harper, in that if he's not hitting for power, he's going to make up for it in stolen bases. Like, Tyler O'Neill is an aggressive guy. He's an aggressive hitter who strikes out. He hits for big power, aggressive on the base pass. He's stealing some bases. Yeah, he's kind of a short guy. I mean, Bogman always jokes because we saw him back in 2016 when he was a Mariner in the AFL out here. And he was a scrap dude. Like, I remember he dove into first base in the AFL. He's a thick muscle guy, but like he just made really bad decisions early on, and he's fixed that, and he's learned to hone his game in a better way. And I love Wander Franco, but hey, the position's deep. Wander is cool. You know, I love the batting average. I think there's going to be solid power, but I don't think the stolen bases are there. I do think Wander's getting a bad rap a little bit, but I'm kind of fadish as well for the cost. And I think Bogman put this on here. This will blow your mind. In FBC, Wander Franco is going 50 and Tyler O'Neill is going 46. But on Fantrax ADP, which you have to know that like Dynasty is probably playing effect, Tyler O'Neill is 65 and Wander Franco is 40 on their ADP. So just think about all of.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Littering and...
Littering and...
In this league.
Break it down.
And there you go, friendos. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. It's the end of hour two. That was Ryan Bloomfield. Just checking back in with that. You got some kind of just jump right in segments. That was a piece from the In This League Fantasy Baseball podcast. We did a live episode where we were doing player debates for your upcoming fantasy baseball season. And Bloomfield's got lots of great stuff. His Bloom boards. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. You want to hear the entire episode. Go check out the In This League Fantasy Baseball podcast. Subscribe there. And we've got all the stuff and things for you. Hour three coming up with Bubba. What do you and Bubba have on docket, Boggs?
We're going to talk
bench, you know, with Bubbetta.
Obviously, we're going to talk about a lot of the playoffs and all that good stuff here. So it is a playoff centric, you know, show this week, obviously, because the NFL is enormous and the biggest thing going right now.
Are you and Bub still running those? Line Stars had you guys had these like little weird competitions, and I know you were dominating in season. Are you?
He won the Monday night one because I picked so many Cardinals because I thought the Cardinals were going to win. So he has beat me. I think I'm 8-3 in those showdowns against Bub.
Against the Bubs. Mm-hmm. So what is it, a full slate or is it just like single?
No, the showdowns are just one game. Those are like, we do it for Thursdays and then the Mondays sometimes. So
that's fun. And you've been beating that butt.
Yep, I have been. That's why I said this is how you know it was a weird weekend, because Bubba won. So, you
know. Poor Bubs. All right, well, hour three is I step aside. Bubba comes in. Hour three, more In This League action. If you missed any of it, make sure you go back. And if you're not listening on the podcast, you can go back and listen to all of our picks. 6-0 against the spread last week. I'm hoping to finish a little bit more. And then, as we mentioned a little bit earlier in the hour, if you guys want more bets as far as what's coming up in the wild card, check out Bet This League, where we'll talk about our five best bets of the weekend, whether it's spreads, over unders, teasers, or player props. We'll talk about those. Bogman will talk about some matchups you can exploit to also try and make some money. And then again, InThisLeague.com, if you guys are looking for any baseball content, because all of my ranks, whether it's Redraft Dynasty, Prospects, all of them are there. They're updated, and you're going to get a fresh new update less than 2 weeks. And Bogman's ranks will be up there as well. So come and support your boys over at InThisLeague.com. Friendos, don't go anywhere, even though I step aside. Hour three of In This League, it's Bubba and Bogman coming up right after this.